Savior, may I learn to love thee, walk the path that thou hast shown. Pause to help and lift another, finding strength beyond my own.
Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories Podcast and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at GayMormonStories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Okay, well, let's move then to your after mission pre-marriage years. You had a little while in there, right?
I did. I got married when I was 24.
Okay.
So I had a few years. I'll give you the part that relates. There's basically one event or time period that kind of relates to what we're talking about, and I'll hit on that. Is I came home from my mission. And I was going to do the thing, go to Utah, go get married, you know, do that thing that everybody does. You got to understand something about me, though. I am not just ingrained in my own mind. I kind of fight the institution of what you're supposed to do. I mean, I didn't want to be the guy who came home from his mission, went to BYU, got married, had 8 kids and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I mean, if I ended up getting married and having 8 kids, that's fine. I just didn't want to do it the way that everybody else did it.
You didn't want to conform for conformity's sake.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it, but I just was like, how boring does that sounds to me. So I came home, but I did go out to Utah mostly because I was like, what else do you do? And so I went to Utah in the summer, and I was getting enrolled in school, and I picked up a job. I actually worked as a cashier at the Circle K that is right on the corner of campus, like one block away from the Cougar on the corner of campus.
Okay.
It's the Circle. Anyway, it was like the only gas station like in that area. And if you went to BYU and got gas, I knew who you were. Because I was there like 40 hours a week, you know, for that summer. And I lived with a couple. All of my friends were still on missions. My close friends from home, they were all on missions. I was the oldest one, so I came back first, even with the delay of the Ivory Coast. And so when I came back, I actually got a house with a couple guys that were a few years older than I was. I mean, they were 23 or 24, which to me seemed so old to not be married in Provo, you know, and I was like, what is wrong with these guys? And, but I went and lived with them because they were the only people that I knew. And really quickly before the fall hit, I decided I can't do the Utah thing. And one of my companions who lived in Southern California, he said, you need to come down here. So I quit my job in the morning, and I left that night and drove to Southern California, and I lived in Pasadena area, San Gabriel, and moved in. They had an extra bed. He lived at home, and their parents rented me a bedroom, like $110 a month. I mean, it was, you know, you can't argue that. But they also had another room rented out to somebody else. And then they had another room over their garage, which was enormous, that was rented out to this guy who was like 30 years old and half active in church and homosexual. And my companion had warned me, you know, that there was a homosexual living on premises, you know, but he was a longtime friend of the family. And this companion of mine, his father was the bishop. They had 6 boys, you know, all had gone on missions and the whole works. And so I got down there and slowly kind of got to know this guy. you know, the other roommate who was gay. And again, a little awkward, a little uncomfortable just because of the unfamiliarity. And I wasn't sure what that meant. I'm a brand new return missionary and everything is really black and white to me at this moment. And homosexuality does not mesh with Mormon doctrine at all in my mind. But again, like you pointed out earlier, he is a human being and I am going to treat somebody as a human. So anyway, I got to know this guy a little bit, and he told me one day, he said, "Hey, well, I had mentioned that I wanted to go to Hollywood and check it out. I'd never been to LA." And he said, "We'll go to Hollywood. I'll take you to Hollywood and we'll go do it the right way, not the touristy way." He said, "We'll hit the touristy stuff, but I'm gonna show you Hollywood." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And this guy, like I said, I think this guy was about 28, 29. So he was, 7 or 8, 9 years older than I was. And so we went to Hollywood and we spent a day in Hollywood. And I didn't know him that well yet, but we got onto the topic of gay, and I asked him, he said, "No questions are off limits, ask away." As now I've learned, almost every gay person is like that. They're like, they want to help people understand, which is fabulous. And he said, "Yeah, nothing's off limits." So we're walking down the streets of Hollywood and I'm asking him probably question. I mean, I'm asking pretty specific questions and probably some weird stuff and just whatever. I've started to feel more comfortable asking him things. And I remember asking him, I said, "So is it bad that it's really obvious to me that you're gay? Is it bad that I think that?" And he goes, "Oh, not absolutely not." He says, "Stereotypes exist for a reason. That a lot of people say that." And I said, "So does everybody know that you're gay down here?" Because we're kind of walking like in a gay sector of Hollywood. And like I said, he was taking me to real Hollywood, not just tourist Hollywood, right? And so we're walking together like down the street, and he goes, "Oh yeah, we're walking and everybody knows I'm gay." I said, "Well, do they think that we're together?" And he goes, "Oh no, everybody knows that you're straight." And I was like, I said, "Really?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, it's just obvious." And he goes, I can't tell you how or why, but it's just obvious. Everybody knows it. He says, "So if you think that people out here thinking you're gay, don't worry, they know you're straight, And as bad as it sounds, I mean, that mattered to me. I didn't want anybody to think I was gay because that kind of scared me a little bit. But we were having a very open conversation. We went to eat at this kind of cool little cafe area. There was a gift shop inside where I don't remember what was in it, but there was a section that was just all gay porn, like gift cards and stuff like that we kind of walked through. And I think he was kind of testing my limits at the time. I mean, I don't know. It was almost like a Hallmark gay sex shop. It was like
Yeah,
it
I mean,
was
there's
weird.
funny cards that have sort of
Right.
pornographic
But it
images that are humorous,
right.
that are popular, So I know
Phallic
what you're talking about, yeah.
yeah, phallic everything all over the place, and it was something that was very unfamiliar to me. And I was like, "I don't know about this," but I was just kind of going with it, it wasn't that big of a deal. But anyway, so we spent a day together and I lived there for over a year, and while he was there, and he told me that he went to a ward in Santa Monica, and he said, "Yeah, that's." I said, "Wow, why do you go all the way down there?" He said, "Well, that's the gay ward around here," and that certainly didn't make any sense to me. I was like, "Wait, there can't be a gay ward." And he goes, "Oh yeah," he said, "They only need one loaf." He said, "They only need one slice of bread when they pass the sacrament around there." I mean, he was amazing. He was funny. He was
Was it Bob
great.
Reese's ward? I mean, I wonder if it's the same ward Bob Reese had been bishop of, because
I don't know. It
he
could
had
have
been
been.
really super welcoming of gays. And I'm pretty sure it was the ward that included UCLA, which is by Santa Monica. I wonder if it's
Yeah.
just sort of was sort of a continuation of that phenomena that he helped establish there.
It absolutely could have been. But I remember him saying this, and it kind of gave me new light to the church and gay people. I was like, "Oh, wait, there are gay people that actually do want to go to church." That didn't really resonate. I mean, that didn't make sense to me. Because I didn't, at the time, I didn't realize you're gay because I don't think I ever thought it was a choice, but I don't think I realized that you were gay. I mean, yeah, I guess I thought you kind of were big. You were gay because you wanted to be gay. So if you wanted to be gay, you wouldn't want to be a Mormon either, because that just doesn't make any sense. So that was weird to me to think that there were gay Mormons that wanted to go to church. I remember thinking that. And I went for sacrament meeting one time just to go check it out with him. Uh-huh. And he went probably 50% of the time.
Yeah.
But through that year, like I said, I didn't see him a lot. He went out at night, did his thing, and he kept the gay out of the house, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely lived his lifestyle. I mean, he was a, I don't know how you say, I guess an active gay person, you know, living a gay life, whatever that means. Not trying to live the Mormon version of the gay life anyway. So I remember talking to him one day and for whatever reason, Daniel, I can't even remember how this happened. All I remember is that it did happen. I know there was at some point where I ended up giving him like a 10-minute back massage. Okay. Uh-huh. And it was another scenario where it was like when I was holding hands with my companion in the Ivory Coast. I remember just forcing myself to ignore it. And it wasn't an attraction thing that he was never attracted to me. I mean, I certainly wasn't to him, but it was literally, I think it might've been me trying to, I mean, it was his back hurt. I mean, there was an issue there, you know, there's a reason for it. It wasn't like, hey, let's give each other back massages, you know?
Yeah.
But there was a therapy element to it, you know? And, you know, and I remember saying, all right, I'm not going to have a problem with this. And I remember forcing myself to it. The funny thing is, I probably would not have found myself giving a back massage to a straight guy. But I think because he was gay and because there was a need, I think I did it to show myself that I wasn't going to be prejudiced.
Yeah.
You know? And
there you go. You're just bringing into play the same thing. You're compensating, you're recognizing your prejudice. And you're right. Compensating for it by trying not to, you know, let it be a barrier to relating to this person.
Now, you're right. Now, it did bother me the whole entire 10 minutes. It really upset me a little bit. I mean, I was not physically shaken, but I did not enjoy that 10 minutes, but I was like, I'm going to get over this, you know?
Yeah. But let me just tell you that, sure. You know, that for me, it was the same thing with women in my life, that if there was some sort of reason that there could be a sexual attraction on her part, this created this aversion on my part, so that I sort of had this recoiling that was not terribly nice, right? And this is something that I could go back now and just be so aware of that I could just deal with it so much better, you know, because I could say, well, there's nothing wrong with affection with this person, even if there is a, you know, even if that person might have some amount of sexual feelings toward me, that's just because they think I'm attractive or whatever. Right. I can just, it doesn't mean, you know, that we can't keep it in perspective and still have some affection between us, right? That can even include some amount of normal physicality. But I can tell you that I had this reaction to it because of the tension about realizing there could be a sexual attraction. I just was so not into that idea that it created a rigidity in me. Mm. So once again, I'm kind of giving you permission to feel that if it was hard, I totally understand, because I've had the same thing in reverse.
Interesting.
Even without all the social, you know, overlays of homophobia that could have been a factor in your situation there. But it's also real. That's real, that we have a certain amount of avoidance for for things that are could be sexual towards people we're not sexually interested in, right?
Sure.
And that's just normal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it actually, on my mission, to go back there just for a second, is I had, it was, I don't know, I had been out for maybe a month or two, and I had never, I don't think I'd in my life seen any kind of public homosexual behavior, like, you know, public display of affection, holding hands, people being just affectionate with each other, you know, because I mean, back even in like early 90s, that was still taboo. I mean, you couldn't do that in public, you know, especially in the South, in North Carolina.
Yeah,
you'd get thrown out of places probably. But I remember on my mission and walking to the grocery store to get groceries for the week, I happened to walk by a car and there was two guys who, I mean, they were like parked on the side, you know, just in the daylight. I think they were just saying bye to each other. Both of them had beards. I remember that because I knew that was the only way that I knew they were both guys for sure. Yeah. And they were leaned across, you know, driver's seat, passenger seat, and they were leaned across each other and they were kissing, you know, passionately. And I saw it, and it, I mean, Daniel, it didn't freak me out. I mean, it grossed me out, you know, if I'm completely honest, you know, and because it was the first time I'd ever seen that, and it took me completely off guard, and I was shocked. I wasn't shocked at my reaction. I was just shocked that I saw it. Uh-huh. When I was actually with this roommate of mine, like that went back to my head. I mean, that like little stuff like that kind of came back to my head. And it was just like, this made me really uncomfortable, you know, and it just brought everything kind of like what you were saying. There was, yeah, it made me rigid and just feel not, you know, not right. I feel a lot differently about that now. But I still haven't seen that a whole lot where I know there's elements of getting used to affection between two men, and having that feel more normal to me that I know I will, address as the years go by, and especially as John gets older. And
well, the more normalcy of it comes from exposure. I mean, you're just not exposed to those images.
Right.
Because this is, you know, once again, I'm going to kind of let you off the hook for having that reaction to the two guys kissing. I mean, if you kind of think about it, if there's a couple of people that you don't find sexually interesting, engaging in sort of sexual behavior, even if that sexual behavior is kissing, if it's not sort of in your category of something you've been seeing all your life, we tend to be kind of appalled by it. So if there's two people, you know, like if you see two 80-year-old, your grandma and grandpa start tongue kissing, you know, passionately, everyone's going to go, oh, right?
You're right. And there was a movie with Tommy Lee Jones in it, I think, more recent. And there was an affectionate scene with him and somebody else who was a very famous woman, obviously. And they started to kiss. No, it might have been James Garner. James Garner. Am I saying that right? Oh my gosh.
It's been a while since I've seen a movie. So I'm sorry.
Anyway,
pop culture.
Anyway, you know, you've just said the exact thing. I've seen a movie recently where probably two people in their 60s were not just kissing. It was a little bit more passionate. And yeah, it did make me feel uncomfortable. I was like, yeah. I don't really want to see that.
It shouldn't. And 60-year-old people are certainly entitled to have passionate kisses, but we don't see them all the time. And there's sort of this sort of acceptable behavior that most 60-year-olds realize that, you know, kissing like, you know, cats in heat, you know, in a public place probably will not seem terribly dignified, even though young people feel okay about doing that. Or, you know, certainly in movies, we see lots of young people kissing passionately, but we never ever virtually never see images of older people kissing or different people. They don't even show us, you know, overweight people kissing. I mean, obviously,
you're right.
There's people with different disabilities. They don't, you know, if you sit around and think of someone who is an amputee and if they're having sex, if this bothers you, why does it bother you? If you think of a dwarf, you know, they're obviously having sex. There are people totally attracted to them and they're in relationships. But if it's not something you're used to someone with dwarfism having sex, and this you have a reaction. Or if you're someone who thinks that, everyone in your life that you've ever seen is has black hair, and if you start thinking of a redheaded person or a blonde person and thinking, oh my goodness, all their pubic hairs are blonde or red or something,
Right.
people could react with an aversion to any sort of difference that they're not used to when they think of it in sexual terms, because we have this sort of built-in desire, well, this built-in drive to have an aversion to any kind of sex that isn't the exact right kind of sex. This is kind of what causes homophobia in a large part, is just sort of this built-in mechanism we have to have an aversion to most kind of sex, except for this one particular kind that we happen to be interested in, right?
No, that makes sense.
With these kind of people that we happen to be interested in. So wherever we are, those are the ones that, and everything else is, it bothers us, right? Even though
Right.
it's not correct that it bothers us, but everything else gives us an ick, those people, disgusting, but it's not disgusting to them. And in fact, it shouldn't be disgusting. It shouldn't be, it shouldn't be looked down upon, right? If two people, just because we don't find them interesting, we have to recognize this, that this ick factor we have is sort of biologically programmed into us, but it's not right.
Right.
It's not right for us to think, oh, how gross that my grandmother's having sex with my grandpa. But everyone, of course, if
Sure.
we stop and think about it, we don't want to think about our grandma having sex with our grandpa at all,
No.
much less our mom and our dad, right?
Right.
But it doesn't mean that that there should be a sort of derision towards them for if we find out that they do it, or if we accidentally see them kissing, or if we decide to go there mentally with the idea of them passionately kissing or doing more stuff, So anyway.
Right. That's, yeah, that's well said. That's, yeah.
Anyway, I hope I didn't
No.
include
No. It,
someone
well,
in an offensive way in that
no, not at
topic, but
all.
the
I mean,
point is.
there, I know you're not a movie guy, but the movie Moonrise Kingdom actually has two teenage, there's a scene that has two teenagers who are supposed to be like 14, 15, and I think they are actually in real life. I think they are under 18. I mean, they have a sex scene. It's if you can tastefully have a sex scene between a 14 and 15 year old in a movie, they, I mean, that's what they did. But oh my gosh, that was uncomfortable. Because you're thinking not only what they're showing, it's you're thinking, okay, these actors are sitting around with all these people watching them and they're having to take direction. It's just, I don't know. I mean, there's no nudity, of course, but it was just all implied, and it was just really uncomfortable to watch. And this movie won all kinds of awards, and and anyway,
Well, I mean, that
but
brings in a different element, which is just that
well.
it is as adults, we have to kind of not approve of teenagers having sex. I mean, we know they do it,
Right,
but we
right.
really, especially as Mormons, we want to discourage that, and we certainly want to it certainly is illegal and should be illegal between people of vastly different ages having sex, right? When they include
Of
teenagers.
course.
But at the same time, we also, in this case, there is a moral thing, and the moral thing is that people are better off having sex when they're of age, right?
Right.
It doesn't mean they don't do it, and it doesn't mean we can't be, teach them how to have safe sex in case they do, and that we ought to have sex education and all that stuff. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
I think we've killed that one, that topic.
Well, I like talking about these things because it's some things that relate. I mean, all of these different things about sexuality in general impact the question of, how do we deal with gay people? And I know you and I have had this conversation about, what should happen with Boy Scouts and the tents, and this is I wrote a essay about it that you read. And your initial reaction was, we don't let boys and girls sleep together, right? Who are 14 in church activities. So what do we do with a gay teen? And that's a really tough question, right?
Right.
Because we don't, we as at a church activity, it's not appropriate for anybody to have sex or even to be in a position where that's highly likely to happen or even looks like it could happen. So it does raise a tough question, you know, once again, where that's complicated because we have all of our prejudices, but we want to be fair and we want to be pragmatic. And so what do we do with that? What kind of policy should we have about Boy Scouts sharing tents, right?
Right.
And so I suggest you all go read my essay at No More Strangers if you want to see my opinions on that. Yeah, I don't know what you kind of came up with, Jake, after thinking about it a while. Do you want to kind of tell me where you stand as a father of a young gay man?
That one I'm actually still a little bit unclear on. I haven't put a whole lot of thought into it because part of me just doesn't really want to. I'm not ready to. I don't think yet.
Yeah.
But as far as like, I mean, I'll comment real briefly on the on the Boy Scout and the tent kind of thing is, I don't think right now, I mean, we're not telling John what he can and can't do with Boy Scouts, but he has become fairly uninterested in uh-huh. scouting. And I think some of that might have to deal with, I don't think he enjoyed the scouting part of it as much, partly because of leaders and just, he wasn't really accomplishing any kind of advancement that he got from me working with him at home on the side.
Okay.
He had a very, very ambitious scout leader, but they never really accomplished anything, you know, his scoutmaster was a very, very, scout guy. I mean, he's always been a scoutmaster in every ward he's ever been in. He's very, you know, he has everything and he knows everything, really knowledgeable, but they just don't accomplish badges, which is kind of weird to me. So I've had to do it on my own with John and that becomes grueling. I was the 11-year-old scout leader and then trying to get John his stuff too. And it just becomes just so much, it just becomes a lot of scouts. Now, I will say this, and I think you and I have talked about this before, but when John came out to us, I was the 11-year-old scout leader in our ward. This was a couple of months before any decision had been made in the scouts on what they were going to do about gays and scouting. At the time, the current policy was that openly gay kids were not allowed to be scouts. I mean, that's right. What it's always been. And actually, that's what it is until this coming January. I mean, it's still that until January 2014 of when the new ruling is implemented.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you're going to go technically, if my son is trustworthy and everything else, I mean, he really shouldn't be going to scouts until January of 2014.
Yeah. Except that the Mormon Church says they never had that policy. So
right,
if we're taking
right.
them on their word, then we can assume that the Mormon in the right. Mormon scouting troops that they can just go now.
Sure. No, I'm with you on that.
Because they did say that. They said this was not our policy. This was a Boy Scout policy. This,
right.
I mean, for what it's worth.
Right. No, I hear you. I hear you. And that's me probably being a little bit more divisive than I need to be. I understand that. But
no,
but,
I mean, I think the church supported the policy behind the scenes, I'm guessing. So, I mean, I'm not letting the church off the hook. But they did since come out and say, we don't have a policy now of discriminating against scouts. We didn't have a policy. And so technically that might be true, but that does certainly let us assume that we can go directly to letting our scouts participate and not wait till January.
Right. Right. but John has become kind of uninterested in scouts. I'm sorry. Going back to when John came out and I was in 11-year-old scouts. One of the first people that we told about John, once we kind of got a handle on it in our own family, I mean, after a couple of days, we went and talked to our bishop because we felt like he should know.
Yeah.
And we kind of wanted to get a read or get a feel on what this was going to be like in our ward, you know, what kind of support we were going to have from our bishop. And we wanted to know that really early on. So we went and talked to him and he was great. I could tell he had never been exposed to this, had never been dealt with it, didn't know really what to do. He kind of ummed and ahed and not sure, here, go read this, you know? But there was nothing that he gave us that we hadn't already found. And so there weren't any local support groups or anything, you know, anything like that. But I told him, I said, listen, I've got to be released as a scout leader, effective right now, like today. Because right now, while it's up in the air, while scouting is up in the air, I have no idea what the future is going to hold for mine and John's relationship. But if something were to ever happen and it became a rocky situation with the gay thing being somehow something that would divide us, which I wouldn't couldn't imagine could be the case. But if that were ever to come to the ca ever to happen, I didn't want him to ever associate me being a leader with a group that was against him. You know, because again, I didn't know the result of what they were going to decide. And they came out and it was a negative thing, and he felt ostracized from Boy Scout. And I was a leader for that group that ostracized him. I couldn't live like that. I was like, I'm not going to be part of that. Release me right now. In 3 months, maybe you can call me back if it's different. But right now, I got to be released. I'm not going to be a scout leader while this is going on and while I've got my son who's going to be dealing with this. You know, but my John and I have a good enough relationship. I would never imagine that would become a problem, but if it was in the realm of possibility, I would just remove that from the equation. And that, 'cause that was important to me. But as far as as far as the sharing tents and that kind of thing, I mean, John was kind of funny. John thought, you know, he thought that scouts, he didn't think that gay scouts should be allowed to go on campouts with other scouts, but he thought that leaders should be allowed to be gay leaders and be, you know, scout masters and stuff, which is the exact opposite of what the Boy Scouts, you know, what the policy is going forward.
So this
And
was
it was,
John's first thought, was that maybe the Gay Scouts shouldn't be camping with the other Scouts.
yeah. He just said, yeah, this is completely John. It was a really interesting perspective that he had, because I guess the misconception with the gay leaders, I think it was back to pedophilia and stuff like that, that is misunderstood. But you know, and age gaps of like 18 or 19-year-old leader and a 17-year-old scout. I don't know. I mean, I don't fully really understand why they can't have gay leaders, but it's not for me to judge. So John's not coming at it from that angle,
Well,
but
they can't have gay leaders because they're hanging on to the discrimination. And I think they're just going through a transition. I mean, it's my opinion that they will
they
come around
will.
that too,
You
but they just
can't.
had to do things one step at a time.
I agree with that. And you can't allow gay scouts and have them turn 18 and kick them out. I mean, and
And they'll figure that out.
that's what they're saying. And of course, that doesn't work. Not very long.
But the reality is, once they change their policy, the most extreme homophobic parts of the Boy Scouts are going to leave, and it's going to leave the whole entire organization more liberal, and it's going to just that will lead to them being more reasonable on that too. I mean, that's what I predict,
I do too.
that they took the most reasonable stance at the time that they could, and with all these groups leaving, the most extreme groups are leaving, that's just going to leave the ones who are there open to a more reasonable solution. So it's just the process they have to go through.
Daniel, I tell you what I kind of secretly wanted, and this has a little. I don't want to really get into politics, but this supports of where I stand more politically is with freedoms and whatnot. I wanted the Boy Scouts to just do what they wanted to do, and if they didn't want gay scouts in there, I was just like, you know, don't have gay scouts in there, and we'll see how long you last. You know what I mean? I mean, if they didn't allow black people into scouts, by now, Boy Scouts would be gone. They'd be gone. You know, I mean, they wouldn't last. And so part of me was like, you know, don't bend because you're feeling pressure to bend. You know, you do what you want to do, and let almost it's almost like let capitalism just work its way out. You know, and I was like, certainly we won't be a part of it. And I think the church would quickly disassociate itself with scout if they didn't
Hopefully.
move on that. Yeah, hopefully. But I've always said I would love to see the church actually come with its own program that to replace Scout, so they have something that they own outright.
Yeah.
That involves camping and that kind of stuff. But
Yeah.
and that's another topic for another day. But I know as long as President Monson is a prophet, the Scouts will be an integral part of the church. I know he's a Scouter for life, so
Yeah. Well, there's lots
and
of
that's fine.
countries. There's lots of countries that have had Gay Scouts for a long time, and Canada's managed to have Gay Scouts for a long time, and they don't restrict even gay leaders. So, I mean, it's just going to come.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Nothing's fallen apart.
I completely agree. When people start to realize, like what you were pointing out earlier, is that gay people are human and not gay people, that's a big part of it to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I battle that every week at church, talking to people, is convincing them exactly that gay people are humans, they're not gay people.
Yeah, and
And when you do, you just take leaps and bounds forward in your understanding and your acceptance when you
yeah.
finally do get that.
But I want to go back to John's initial idea that maybe the Gay Scouts couldn't camp. Now there's a point of view where I could see to him. I think it depends on the gay individual, how they might come naturally to that. But there's always been gay people who sort of liked seeing themselves sort of separate, not one of the guys, not one of the girls. We're sort of this other category that we mix sometimes with girls, we mix sometimes with guys, depending on our interest, and we're cool with that. And from that point of view, having a different set of rules wouldn't be that, bothersome, some sort of a different set of sensitivities. I have to say, I don't agree with John on that. I think it would be absolutely unworkable to restrict the gay teens, partly because most gay teens don't feel that. They do want to interact with the boys. They just want to be normal boys who were just have this one difference, right? And the other
Well,
thing is
John's
they've been doing it all along. They've been doing it for 100 years. The fact
right.
that they're openly gay isn't really changing by any substantial amount the number of gay boys out there camping. What it is
What?
changing is the gay boys who are admitting they're gay who are out there camping. And to
Right.
me, this is an advantage because it helps them be more mature and clear about boundaries. Because like you were saying, you were dealing with these encounters with these people holding hands with this mission companion because of this cultural element, giving a back rub to this gay guy, talking to this other gay guy and affirming him as a person. But you were dealing with how to have boundaries with a gay person and how to also deal with your sort of, what these things mean. Because every straight person who hangs out with gay people a lot has to come to terms with, what does physicality mean? What is sexual? What is not? How do we interpret things, right? Now,
Right.
12-year-olds can perfectly do this. They can know, oh, he's gay, so when we do this playful stuff, there's a different potential for what it means, right? When we're playfully wrestling, we can still playfully wrestle, but if we're recognizing the potential, just in the same way as high school, sometimes I wrestled with girls. Girls and guys sometimes have this physicality, but the boys and girls were recognizing that when we're wrestling, we're a little bit careful how we wrestle so that we're not overly touching certain parts of their bodies when we wrestle. I mean, there even though we were getting playful and physical, we were recognizing boundaries, right?
Right.
And so a gay 12-year-old and a straight 12-year-old who are nonchalant about this can perfectly do this in the same way. They can perfectly kind of work out their boundaries, work out how playfulness can be interpreted in the context of, yeah, there might be a potential for sexuality here that we need to establish a boundary. 'Cause the kids go to Mutual all their lives and go on camping trips with mixed gender. We had lots of youth conferences where we were out there camping. I mean, we had to deal with being in mixed gender situations where we just had to behave ourselves. And the kids who are gay, they just do the same thing. And it's natural and easier to do if you're open about it. The ones who are going to have trouble are the ones who don't recognize what's going on. So having an openly gay person in your midst is way better than having a closeted gay person in your midst, because you're not gonna interpret the playfulness accurately, because you're not aware of where it's coming from, right?
Right.
So to me, the honesty about it lowers the chances of sexual acting out in those contexts, and because everything's on the table.
Yeah,
That's my argument.
no, and I would agree with that. And I think the wonderful thing about John is this is John's initial, like his initial reaction to the news. And if we sit here and we said, and he sit there and he heard you say all that, he would immediately wrap his brain around that, and I think, and understand that. But he was coming at it from the from one angle alone, and he was thinking two gay scouts should not share a tent. That's all. I think that was as far as his thought went, because he was thinking, well, a boy and a girl on a camp out shouldn't be allowed to share in a tent. You know, why should two gay scouts be allowed to share a tent? And I think that's where it ended for him. But and yeah, of course, from that, if that's the only issue in question, then that makes sense. But like you've just established, there's a lot more to think about, a lot more to consider.
I mean, it might be that there's two gay guys there, and they just the only way they're not going to get totally bullied is if they stick together, you know. I mean, you really have to take into account just the particulars of those kids and of the
Absolutely.
other youth. And you need to be alert, and hopefully you have enlightened parents who can participate in the discussion and talk to the kids and say, you know, you guys are two gay guys sharing a tent, you know, and are you guys prepared to, you know, respect the boundaries that everyone's expected, you know? Because I think it would be a little bit hard to impose. It'd be unworkable to simply outright say no two gays guys will ever share a tent, right?
You're right.
Because it just would be impossible to have such a hardcore rule like that. But it might make sense to think about if these two gay guys should share the tent, and to like have their parents, make sure their parents involved feel okay. I mean, hopefully in a perfect world, all the parents would be affirming and supportive, and would be able to kind of participate in discussion with our boys and say, you know, is this, can we expect that you guys are going to keep the standards of the church on the scouting camp in this context, and really taking it all into account? But anyway, that's
Right.
it's a tough issue, but my advice is not to create a hard policy like that, you know,
I
just
completely agree.
to take it case by case.
Right, I completely agree. I was going to say, I would think two gay guys on a camp out would do everything they could to not share tents to keep other people from saying things that
Well,
you know.
hopefully that too. I mean, hopefully in my mind, the least risky situation would be have a gay guy and a straight guy, because straight guys just don't want to have sex with gay guys. I mean, this is proven. Every
Sure.
statistic shows it. Gay, straight youth just simply don't experiment with gay sex. I mean, it's really, really well established that that's not a phenomenon. And so the safest, the most least likely is, you know, match up the straight guys with the gay guys. But once again, that's going to be easy in a non-homophobic world, because straight guys who grow up with gay guys or who just think it's nonchalant about it, they're not going to have a big problem sharing a tent with a gay guy, you know? And
Oh,
if
I hear that. Yeah, I have a no, I have a little bit of a man crush on Eddie Vedder, the lead singer of Pearl Jam. I mean, I just I don't think he's gay, but I wouldn't make out with him. But you know, he wouldn't turn me gay.
Even he wouldn't turn you gay, even
Even
with a man
he
crush.
that's how I know I'm straight. Even Eddie Vedder wouldn't turn me
Well,
gay.
I'm gay, and
My
Eddie
wife.
Vedder wouldn't turn me gay either, but anyway,
Yeah, there you
I
go.
get your point.
Yeah. But no, I
Okay.
don't imagine Eddie Vedder is a gay guy's dream either. So anyway.
Well, but anyway, that we sort of got off the subject, but it was just
Yeah.
sort of like putting into context how all of these issues about sexuality to these young people who grow up with that are just non-issues. But to us who grow up in a different framework, even the gay people, we all have to spend a lot of time kind of figuring it out and putting it in place and removing our feelings and our prejudices and our and recognizing where our aversions come from, recognizing where our attractions come from, recognizing where our homophobia comes from, and just trying to, you know, make a sensible understanding of all of any issue. And that's just one more on the list of examples. But we kind of got out of our timeline for your
right
for your life cycle. So let's go back. You know, you had one more experience where you had a human interaction with a gay guy that sort of tested your limits, but helped you to kind of push through some of your prejudice, which probably helped you later in life, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So so let's keep going. You know, what happened in your timeline after that?
After that, it gets probably a little bit more dull. You know, I was down in Southern California for a while, and I
lived there, and there's some moment where I realized I've got to get into school and look at my future a little bit more.
And I ended up going back to Utah and enrolled in school. And but like I said, I wasn't going to be the BYU guy who got married and had 9 kids. Instead, I went and got a job. I enrolled at UVSC. What is it now?
UVU now, but
UVU, yeah. Anyway, I enrolled there, and in the winter I went and worked as a lift operator and taught kids snowboarding at the Canyons Resort.
Uh-huh.
And then in the summer I worked at Kinko's. Okay. Now FedEx, right? FedEx, yeah. Kinko's. But you know, I made copies and that was it. And that's actually where I met Meg. We were coworkers there, and she had dated a guy. She was young. I think she had just turned 18, when I started working there, and I was this old 23-year-old and 22, 23, anyway. So we met and we were just friends. She had a boyfriend that she'd had in high school. I was dating some girls here and there, you know, and we were just really, really good friends. She came to me to talk about her boy problems. I talked to her about my girlfriend or whatever, you know,
yeah.
And we were just we had that friendship. And, you know, a year and a half later, when we were both became available, we got married. So I was continuing to work for the ski resort in the winter and Kinko's in the summer. And, we got married. And early on, I won't go into details, but early on, we knew we were going to have difficulty having kids if we'd be able to at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had the thought, we got married on May 15th. And, you know, I should step back. I should tell you this little story about Meg and I, because it's interesting and it relates kind of. We worked together for a year and we were good friends. And then actually in the summer, like in the dead of summer, she left Utah and she went down to Arizona to go live with like her sister. Uh-huh. And she didn't think she was coming back to Arizona. I mean, I'm sorry. She didn't think she was coming back to Utah. She was actually kind of running away from a bad boyfriend, the same guy that she'd been with forever. Uh-huh. And he and I had actually gotten into some altercations as I was somewhat her bodyguard at work.
Okay.
That's a whole nother soap opera, but,
while she was having trouble with this guy, he was coming around and harassing her at Kinko's, and you were sort of getting in between you and her, and this was causing you altercations with him. So
correct. I was her bodyguard from her abusive boyfriend. We'll just call it that to keep it simple.
Uh-huh.
But so she basically fled Utah and went to Arizona for a summer. And, she didn't know if she'd come back.
Uh-huh.
And I left Utah and I went to Northern California to do just a work opportunity just for the summer. That was going to make me some good money in the summer. Right. Before I came back, but I wasn't sure if I was going to come back either, you know, and I had written Meg off and she, me, we were just really, really good friends. And I just
had resigned to the fact I'd probably never see her again.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend had forbidden her to ever talk to me again, that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, this isn't worth it. This isn't worth it to me, you know? I didn't know that Meg got to the same point where she's like, this isn't worth it to me. And she went to Arizona. So I left before I even knew she was gone.
Okay.
But anyway, the short of it is I came back in the fall to go back to school, and I walked in to Kinko's and I say, hey, I'm back. Is there any way I can get my job back? And sure enough, they gave me my old job back.
Uh-huh.
And the same day they offered me my job, I was walking out the front door and Meg was coming in the back, and she had been back for about 2 weeks and she had gotten her job back.
Okay.
And that was that. Right. And so we immediately just picked up where we left off as friends, but this time neither one of us were attached to anybody.
Yeah.
And we started to date, and very, very quickly, did not take very long at all for us to get serious very fast and realizing we're going to get married. I mean, it was quick,
yeah.
but we had had over a year of history of knowing each other and just being really good platonic friends,
yeah.
You know, which most couples don't get that.
Right.
So we knew how to be friends without being romantically involved. And so we figured we were starting on a good foundation. But the bottom line is we talked about being married, but we'd also talked about not choosing a date because I didn't have a ring. And I was like, I don't want to have a date and not have a ring. Cause then it just feels silly. I mean, if you have a date and you're not engaged, well, you really are engaged. You're just too cheap to have a ring. I don't know. So we were talking one night about marriage, but not having a date. And I just kind of said, you know, I was like, if I'm honest, I said, I do have a date in mind, but we had agreed not to talk about a date.
Yeah.
You know, I said, but I have a very specific date in mind. And she says, is it May 15th? And she was sitting up on a couch and I was like laying down on the floor and I sat up and I was like, wait, why did you say that? And she said, ever since I was like 12 or 13, I've always wanted to be married on May 15th. And I said, well, why? And she's, oh, well, I've told all my friends know this. I've told them this forever. I just thought that April was too cold and that June was too hot. And I just thought right in the middle of May would be the absolute perfect time to get married for like weather reasons.
Okay.
And she goes, why? And I said, that's the date that I have in mind. And she was like, no, it's not. You know, she didn't believe me. But I said, no, you have to believe me because that is the date that my parents were married on. And since that is no longer a significant date in my mom's life since she's remarried, that's something I've kind of always wanted to do since my dad died, is to kind of have that date mean something again. And then we kind of looked at each other and we were just like, well, so much for not having a date. but what we did is the very, very first thing that we did is we went to a calendar and we were like, our luck, this is going to be on a Sunday, right? You know, wanting a temple wedding, and we're not going to be able to do it. And we get in there and it was on a Friday.
Okay.
And we were like, all right, serendipitous. so it's done. So
how far in the future was that? I mean, were we talking?
This was November.
Okay, so you still had 6 months to.
We still had some time. Yeah. So then I quickly began trying to acquire a ring, and I told my mom this little story with the date and stuff. And my parents, when they were starting out, went through some tough times, and they had to go and pawn my mom's wedding ring to get money to put food on the table. And they went back a few months later and the ring was gone and they couldn't get it back.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I think she had a band for years. And then later, a little bit later, when, you know, there was plenty of money to be had, my dad went and bought her actually a sapphire ring that she actually wore on her wedding finger. But it was a fairly good sized sapphire that had a bunch of little diamonds around it. And it was, you know, he was like, this isn't your wedding ring, but it was her favorite stone. And anyway, so we took that ring and I bought a diamond and put a diamond in that ring. And that was the ring that I gave Meg.
Okay.
And so we got engaged on December 7th, which is Pearl Harbor day, which I didn't think of at the time. So we got engaged on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor and then got, of course, married on May 15th. I mean, how could we not? And it rained all day, but that's life. Yeah. So, again, that doesn't really matter, but it's just kind of a fun little story about that we have, that relates back to my dad and the whole family tie. Yeah. And
it's fun to have some serendipitous sort of things that
it is
that make you feel like you were supposed to be together.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows if that's real or not, but you know,
who knows? I'm with you. I don't know. I don't really care. It just makes life more fun when it happens.
Makes life more fun. Yeah.
So we got married and we didn't think we'd be able to have kids. And so we'd had the conversation. I think we used some sort of contraceptive for like a couple of weeks, and we had the conversation. It could take us 9 years to get pregnant, if at all. And so we decided if it takes us 9 years, I don't want 3 years from now, say, okay, we're ready to have kids, and then have it be 12 years, you know, from the time we got married.
Yeah.
And so we said, you know what, we're just going to roll the dice. If it happens, it happens. Great. If it doesn't, whatever. And on Christmas morning of that year, we found out we were pregnant with John.
Okay.
So it was quick.
So before a year was out, she was already pregnant.
Yeah. Married May 15th.
Yeah.
Pregnant December 25th, 1998. And he was, to this day, miracle baby. We've tried since then to have kids for a long time, and we've spent a lot of money trying to do it and just have not been able to do it. Haven't been able to have it. Haven't been able to have any other kids. So, he's truly our miracle kid. You know, and now we're so grateful that we didn't wait like 2 years, because we're convinced that if we'd waited 2 years, we might not have any kids.
Yeah.
So, and we certainly wouldn't have a gay kid and have all the blessings that we have. So, we feel really fortunate.
Yeah.
To have that.
The stars aligned and
mm-hmm.
they spot you what your family is. And I can't imagine why you would regret it, because you've got a really beautiful family. But
thank you.
Yeah. But
I will say this though, early, I don't know if we talked about this before we were married or after we were married or whatever, but I have always had this little thing in the back of my head, Daniel, that the thing that scared me to death, I mean, nobody wants a Down syndrome baby when you don't have one.
Right.
When you have one, you wouldn't trade that in for the world. You're so grateful that you've been given that gift, but yeah. Nobody goes out wishing that their unborn child is going to have Down syndrome,
right?
You know, or Asperger's or just anything, you know, just anything that makes them not normal, you know, as the world would call it. But my biggest fear from early on, and Meg knows this, is that I was going to have a gay son. I mean, that was like a fear of mine. And I don't know why it was a fear, but it was something that was prevalent in my mind. And I would think about it about, you know, once or twice a year. It wasn't like it didn't like consume me or anything, but it was something that when I talked about having kids or having a kid, or even when John was like one or two and there were really no signs of anything, that always was something that made me the most nervous. And it wasn't because I don't think it was because he would be gay. It was because that was the one thing that I think I wouldn't know what to do with. I wouldn't know how to parent it, and it scared me. And Meg always knew that. And when we found out John was gay, she told me, she's like, yeah, for like the last 13 years, like I, just because you had that fear, she's like, I've always felt like it was preparing us for this. You know, she's kind of always felt like she was going to have a gay kid, because it was like the thing that I scared me the most, you know. But so
I'm looking back at that fear. Do you think that, I mean, if I think about, you know, what you've told me about your experience, which you're going to tell me more about for the sake of the listeners, that the fear of having a gay kid must is logical for a Mormon, because if you know anything about it, you must, it must be obvious that that would be a difficult spot, right?
I absolutely.
And something that can shake you up in a hard way. I mean, it's hard for me to understand what was causing you that fear in you, but I can certainly, it makes me wonder if thinking, yeah, if I have a child, that it's going to make it hard for me to proceed with my religion in the same way that I was before, with all the expectations I had of how it fits, of what our eternal family looks like. If I have all this paradigm that is absolutely, what could possibly shift it more than having a gay child? Well, I can't think of anything, because it does. It automatically forces a rethinking.
Well, Daniel, as much as I would love to say it had everything to do with the church and how I would handle that, if I'm completely honest about it, I don't think it did. I think it had everything to do with prejudices. And I think if I knew it was possible that I could have had a black kid, for example, that might have been right up there with it. But of course, that wasn't plausible. I mean, that could not happen. And I think it had to do with prejudices. And I was like,
you're getting down to the same thing I talked about earlier, the internal racism that we all have, the homophobia, the sexism.
Having, and we can get to this too, but having a gay son has made me so, so less racist, like in ways I never thought it would spill over to that part of my life or part of my feelings. But yeah, no, it's changed me in ways that I never could have done on my own. So, I mean, I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for like this blessing and this opportunity to have my eyes opened, if you will. But no, I mean, I think the fear was more along the lines of, I don't understand gay people. I don't really want to hang out with them. If I have a son that's gay, that's going to just kind of freak me out. And I wish I could say it was because it didn't fit within the confines of the Mormon church or the Mormon teachings. Cause that would be the easy, I think, most understandable answer.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't that. Cause I never thought about gays and the Mormon church beyond, oh yeah, if you want to be a gay Mormon, you just have to be celibate. That's just another challenge in life. Never thought about it any deeper than that.
Okay.
Never had to.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what I think most Mormons are now. They don't have to. It's easy to say, well, yeah, you just follow the commandments and you'll be good. You'll be happy. It's easy to say that.
Right.
Until you're affected by it.
Really actually know someone.
Until you have to face the gray. And Meg's probably used that term with you, but I mean, most Mormons live their life with obedience, obedience, obedience. It's black or white. And there is so much gray in the gay Mormon world that when you really have to dig deep and look at doctrines from their deepest meanings, it gets really confusing and really inconsistent, and it doesn't add up. But on the surface, it's easy. It's easy. That's just a challenge you're given, but it's not that simple.
Yeah.
So that scared me because of my prejudices, not because of my faith.
Yeah.
But like I said, I wish I could just say it was my faith, because that kind of, a little bit seems more admirable. But you know, if I'm honest, you know, that's not what it was. But that's also led to my change. I think the change that I've been through over the last couple of months.
Yeah.
I was able to lose some of those prejudices a lot easier.
Yeah.
But
well, so talk about, you know, let's go back, you know, to, you know, those years, you know, your son's early years and your life as a family until the, you know, the events of this, of John's coming out. Is there anything remarkable you'd want to tell me about that or anything interesting?
The only really things, I mean, there's nothing incredibly remarkable, you know, he showed signs of, he liked dolls. He liked Pink, you know, which is, I know is really common for a lot of gay pre-adolescent kids. You know, they fall into a lot of the stereotypes that fit, female children, than more than males. You know, I knew he wasn't athletic. You know, you could tell from an early age, and Daniel, I played every sport under the sun, and I'd like to think I excelled at a lot of different sports.
Yeah.
Meg played basketball in high school. I mean, we're both athletes, you know, and I'm still at 40. I'm out every weekend and two nights a week playing tennis and doing whatever I can to be, you know, it has nothing to do with staying in shape. It has to do with just enjoying the sports that's and competing. Meg and I we both come a little bit from musical backgrounds. You know, we can both carry a tune. We can read music a little bit. I can play the piano by ear a little and that kind of thing. But to the level, but John came out like completely no athletic ability. And we tried him out and everything like you're supposed to do as a parent, expose your kid to everything and see what sticks. And so he played soccer and basketball and baseball or T-ball. And he just didn't have an interest. And I was like, I'm not going to force this. He wasn't that great at it. Didn't really want to do it. And I was like, we're not going to do this. But he had, when he's 2 or 3 years old, as soon as he could talk, he would ask Meg to listen to like classical music station. And he would be in the back, like just kind of bobbing his head around. And he would say, Mom, do you hear the cello? You know? And I'm like, I don't even know how he knew what a cello was. And then he's like picking the cello out, you know, in this classical piece of this orchestra. It's incredible, really. So we knew he was musically gifted from an early age. So every stereotype that revolves around a gay kid was probably there.
Yeah.
You know, people have told us left and right now, I've always known he was gay. You know what I mean? And it didn't surprise us that he was gay, but it was still shocking. You still don't really think that until you know it.
You know, but it kind of, I don't know why it kind of bothered me. It bothered me when people would say that, like, yeah, didn't surprise me. I'm like, oh, good for you. But that comment always, I don't know why, it always bothers me a little bit. Because, you know, it's almost like they're saying, oh, I knew this secret about your kid way before you did. I don't know why people, I know that's not what they mean, but that's kind of how I hear it. And it gets under my skin a little bit because, but that's okay. I mean, I don't know if that as a gay individual, I mean, does that, when people say that, I mean, people said that about you, does that?
Most gay people I know sort of embrace it. If you talk to, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I'm attached to my identity. Me personally, I'm attached to my identity. I'm attached to my masculinity. I really think of myself as, I mean, I'm not, you know, crazy mountain man masculine, but I'm sort of a, you know, I'm a go-getter. I own a hammer. I tear down the walls in my house.
Right.
I do my own remodeling. I was always a hiker. I was not good at throwing a ball like most gay guys, but I was athletic just the same. I was the fastest runner in my school. And I was always attached to these masculine parts of my personality. And so for me, I sort of played off this society homophobia too, and sexism. And I just decided to embrace my more masculine side and sort of, you know, to go with that and to, you know, I'd certainly have my feminine side, and I probably maybe wasn't that naturally masculine in some ways, but I maybe tried to be masculine. So maybe someone right. like me wouldn't be that excited to tell everybody that, you know, when I was in elementary school, I preferred playing hopscotch with the girls than playing soccer with the boys. But I did, you know, I preferred playing hopscotch with the girls. And so, but I think most gay men are less, are not that concerned with both, with being masculine and feminine. Because I interviewed so many guys in this sort of younger generation who are now 20 something, and they're a pretty common thing to say is just say, oh, I loved My Little Pony. I wanted a My Little Pony, you know, and so that's kind of, and they just sort of embrace that. And so it's sort of, I don't think, you know, I don't think most people as adults are bothered by someone saying, oh yeah, you were feminine or sensitive as a kid or a sissy or whatever. I think,
right.
I think we just sort of, you know, embrace that as part of, you know, the experience that we went through and got where we got to. And when you kind of eventually accept yourself as you are, you kind of accept those parts that were at the time leading to bullying and leading to things. But I'm guessing that since John wasn't bullied about these things, he probably doesn't have any reason to feel bad that he liked music more than sports, or other than, you know, maybe most of the guys in school were liking the sports.
Not at all.
I mean, if that came to me, it was because I was being teased because I liked girl things, or if, you know. So my guess is that John wouldn't be that bothered that people figured out he's gay, right?
Oh, no, he's not at all.
Yeah.
He's,
because he just happens to, you know, he's lucky enough to have an environment where he wasn't, you know, harassed by his father, like some fathers do, about the, you know, if he did anything slightly feminine or have bullies at school or whatever, that those are things that sort of give us a reaction or a negativity about being maybe feminine or less masculine or whatever. Or not.
I never liked his, him being effeminate. I mean, I never like really embraced it, but I certainly wouldn't say anything about it. And I certainly didn't pressure him in any other way to be more macho. I wouldn't say any of that because, I mean, Meg and I, from early on, we said, you know, we're going to raise a child to be in the most safe, confident manner that we can. And, you know, for us was just to be as reaffirming to who they are, no matter what, yeah. You know, and we said that from day one, and we've gone out of our way to do that. And we've gotten, people have emailed us during this whole process of how they blame his gayness on, you know, our openness and how everything's our fault and what we've exposed him to and how we haven't guided him the right way. But I'm like, we're letting him be who he is. And I'm sorry, but if that's a problem for you, you know, actually we don't really reply to any of that, but
yeah. But I just want to bring it back to your basic response. You have these prejudices inside of you, you know, they even arrived, here you are, a parent, and you still got these prejudices. You're scared that you might have a gay son. Here you are, your son is showing some feminine tendencies, and you're not quite sure how this fits into your prejudice, you know, but what you let win out was the important part, because you have this other part of you that says, I'm going to affirm, I have a higher value here. I might have this prejudice. I mean, you weren't sitting here thinking about it this way, but this is what was kind of going on in your unconscious. I have a higher value here, which is that my son needs to be affirmed as a person. I love my son, and I need to relate to him as a human, and I don't need to let this be an issue. And so right. Even if you didn't actually concretely say that, that's what you did. You did the same thing you did in those other situations. You took a higher ground, because even though you had these, you know, these vestiges of, you know, homophobia in your head that you couldn't help have, you didn't let those play a role. And that John's lucky that he had a father that could do that. That's great. I mean, it's great that now you're also rethinking those other things too. That's going to improve your relationship with your son. But in the meantime, he benefited from 12, 13, 14 years of, you didn't really know he was gay, but you were taking an attitude of affirming and letting him be what he wanted to be. And that's fantastic. That's probably why John's so amazing now, you know, that he's entering this with so few of the baggage that most gay teens have.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to give you kudos for being that way, just not just with your son, but in these other ways in life. You've really, by having that attitude in so many areas of your life, it made a difference. Your son came to the right family. You
know? I'm glad that we're talking now, because if you had talked to the Jake 1 month into this process, I wouldn't like that Jake very much. I feel like Meg has kind of led the way here, and she's been dragging me along and helping me see the light, if you will, quicker. So,
Well, I'm glad I'm talking to you now, but even the Jake who had some attitudes he regrets, you know, that you now regret, in spite of that, you were always able to put John first. You were, even mm-hmm. when you were having your biggest doubts, you put him ahead of your prejudices. And you said, you know, I might be struggling with this, but this, you didn't put it onto him. You didn't let it get in between you and him. And so, like I say, I'm super thrilled that you're working out your attitudes and getting a better perspective on them. But on the other hand, I really have to give you kudos for having, you know, in the meantime, been a loving father to your son and not let those things, not let the homophobia that you were having interfere with his having a nice, happy childhood and a nice coming out and being there for him. So, you know, once again, I just have to, you know, from what you've told me, I have to give you kudos for not letting your own prejudices that you now recognize have been damaging, you know, because a lot of people with those prejudices could have been applying them towards their child, right?
Right. Well, thank you. You got to give Meg at least 51% of those kudos because she's been dragging me along a little bit, and I've been coming willingly, but I've been following her willingly, but with my heels dug a little bit, you know, but like a smile on my face, but an anchor in the ground, you know, but we're going in the right direction. So,
well,
and Meg has a lot to do with that. So he doesn't have the right parents. I've got the right wife, and
I think he has the right parents.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see the podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation today at gaymormonstories.org. Music for this podcast was graciously donated by Nabby Parkinson Folk and Ricky Parkinson. That thou hast shown. Pause to help and lift another, finding strength beyond my own. Savior, may I learn to love thee. Imperfectly.